Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. And why am I giggling? It's not important, folks. Let's just say if you decide to drink a frothy, thick beverage right before you start a podcast, it's not a good idea. I'm Andrew Main, and speaking of thick and frothy, I've got Brian Brushwood.
I am. I'm feeling whipped up like a butter churn of milk.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hey.
Nice. There was a story Penn Jillette would tell about how he was walking down the street in New York, and there's this jogger. Jogger's running and stops and goes, "Hey, Penn Jillette, funniest man on TV." And Penn's like, "Hey." No response. Didn't think you're any clever, nothing funny to say. He's like, hey,
it's King of the Comebacks, Andrew Main.
Yeah. Hey. Gentlemen, we're, it's interesting. I'd like to say, I think that if I were to describe this sort of period we're in right now and why I think it's worth getting a little bit more deeper into the subject is the fact that we're 9 years ago, cell phones changed dramatically with the introduction of the iPhone and then this sort of this focus that mobile is going to happen in this very exciting way. And then shortly later on, Android changing the way the paradigm they were going at it and jumping into it, and Google throwing a tremendous amount of resources saying, hey, we think we can play at this game too and make something really cool and compelling, which they have done. But that period of time is very interesting because we're almost 10 years later, what we accept is the norm. It wasn't always like that. We didn't know how much phones were going to be the center of our life. We didn't understand how much we were going to be moving a lot of what we did with computing to that. When I send out surveys on Twitter and I ask what percentage of people are on their phones, it's half and growing. It's getting even more than that. Now we're in the middle of a new paradigm and we've got two pioneers, two astronauts into the ethereal space of this new realm of virtual reality are here on our show right now. And I mean Brian and Justin.
Oh, okay. I was really excited.
Gentlemen, so you guys both jumped into the HTC Vive, which I would say that we here on Weird Things, we called that last year is going to be the clear winner. And when I say we, I mean me and then you guys when you tried them.
Well, certainly, but take it from a guy who backed the wrong horse. You could have the superior platform and then have the inferior one get the better software or just be more popular, and therefore you feel like a chump in your very small clubhouse. And by the numbers, Oculus is vastly outselling the Vive. But as far as the games, I do feel like the Vive is fundamentally different.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, what you're seeing now is, Ashley and I have both been doing streams, and we were playing, Hover Junkers, which has become our kind of favorite little game here. Okay. So Vive thoughts. Brian, what do you, I mean, I guess like, the big headline, still awesome.
Yes.
Reporting from the consulate in VR town, still super rad.
Okay, but here's what's different. Number one, I've gotten very good at giving demos of the Vive. Like, I could make this kind of a part-time job. Number two, found myself getting a little itchy. Like, I'm poking around in the Vive store, looking at Steam VR, and I'm just like, is that good? Let me look up reviews. Let me check this out. Definitely might have subscribed to the reddit.com/r/Vive discussion. I'm already hungry for those next level games. And to my surprise, and I want you to know that what I'm about to say is meant with all love and the deepest admiration and affection. But it was fascinating to get. I got my mom and my dad, and my aunt and uncle, And my uncle is one of those, I don't know, he likes to ask questions, you know, and just kind of figure out stuff from a different angle. And he was very, very impressed with the Vive experience and then took it off. He's like, man, that was really, really cool. I'll never do that again. What's the point of it? And I was just like, what are you going to do with it? And then now to his credit, he immediately followed up with like, well, then again, I thought the same thing about lasers 30 years ago. Now they're in everything. They're in the DVD player. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So, but I thought it was a great moment because I didn't have a ready-made answer. All I could do was wave my hands and say like, oh, imagine checking out your tumor with your doctor in 3D space and stuff. And it's like, some critical version of my own brain starts saying like, what's the point of that? Wait, seeing your tumor clear are going to be great for some reason? I'm like, I don't know.
Well, that's the hard part is that, you know, in any kind of paradigm, if you're looking at the world works pretty well for you right now, it's hard to go, why do I need that? You know, cell phones were a great example of that. Was I have a phone. Why do I need a phone where people can bother me, you know, far away? And as you had a phone and you're like, yeah, but the world's really different for you when anywhere you are, you can pick up your phone and call a friend. And once you understand that you have this capability, like I do most of my phone calls in my car. And yeah. Having that ability has changed my life. It's made it easier for me to talk to people I wouldn't otherwise, you know, do so with. Cell phones have made it easy for families to stay together in many ways. Maybe reasons for them to move apart too, because it's convenient. But it's very hard when you're sitting still going, I don't think it's going to affect me. And those are people often the last ones to get one. And then finally they do. And they're like my parents telling me about the new apps they get all the time. I think that it can be hard, but I think that Justin's a very interesting case because Justin, what kind of gaming hardware did you have before you got the Vive?
I mean, we only have the Vive because incidentally, the badass monster machine that we use for
live streaming. Yeah.
Live streaming is also great at doing the Vive, right? So it's like, I haven't owned a console in 20 years, probably. Wow. I guess the last one that I owned, in fact, I don't know if I've ever bought one with my own money. I think every console that I've had has at least been subsidized by my parents. But yeah, no, it's just, here's what's amazing to me is that having spent a little bit of time in the VR space as it has evolved and like checking in here and again, the most exciting stuff was the glimmer of a promise, you know? And what's rad about the Vive, and I think, you know, probably we'd be echoed by Brian, and the reason why, like Brian, I was hunting in VR, by the way, hunting through the Steam store to see what things I could buy. Was like, it's just, there's no doubt that all the tools are there. It's literally just a developer's game now. That's yeah. Like, you know, just build the game. Tell a story, man. Like, you have the Gutenberg press. Like, let's go.
Well, and I think we're definitely going to get there on the games front. And there's no shortage of awesome demos. You know, you can have someone play Space Pirate Trainer and then say, now imagine a sprawling epic story where you're a traveling bounty hunter wanted by the wrong forces. You pissed off Weyland Yutani, and now you got to be it's like, I'm not worried about the game story. But yet, when you think of the iPhone and you think of apps, when the App Store first opened, yeah, games. That's all we talked about. Use the accelerometer, steer, whatever. I feel like 10 years from now, we will not think of VR as a gaming platform. I think we're gonna say, oh, well, yeah, no, let's have a telepresence sit down with blah, 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 or show me a tech demo from an FO, first-person view. And, you know, I feel like there's significant business applications that I just don't even know yet that are going to sound dumb when I say them, but that will be obvious 10 years from now.
I agree. I think as it becomes less cumbersome and less, hold on, like, you know, as it becomes more this or becomes, that's for me, that I did the sound was me pretending to put glasses on for our podcast listeners. I totally agree that it's going to change and we're going to see this.
yeah, there's X number of things that you decide to go do virtually. I do think that if you look at the video game market, one of the things you realize is that if you look at as a whole of the population, what a small percentage of people actually have consoles and actively use them and buy games, but it is economically as big as the movie industry. You know, the first, you know, is the theatrical side of, you know, the first theatrical side of movies.
Sure.
And that, I think, is only going to grow because, like, you know, we have Justin's like looking at games. I'm a guy that's like, well, I'm not a console guy, but every time I've played one of these things, that is really cool. That's more of the experience. And what we're going to see right now, we're looking at mods and things for existing stuff. Nobody has spent, that we know of yet, $20 million creating a really incredible immersive game. That's starting now, though. Those teams are starting. The funding's being put into stuff and building future versions of stuff, not just with this compatibility, but with the idea of making the gameplay work with it, with what we've learned. And that's what's going to be exciting, is we're going to see in the next year as people say, oh, and what the beautiful thing, too, is between, you know, Vive and Oculus is that if you build your thing in Unreal, you know, or if you build it in Unity, you can make it work on both.
So imagine how ballsy and audacious it would be, and yet also forcibly immersive and smart, to have a first game that will not begin playing until you lay down prone on the ground, because that's the way the story begins, is with you coming to consciousness, laying there on your own carpet. That would be amazing.
Oh yeah, you know, we saw. As video games became, you look at the Wii was sort of fun, but then it didn't kind of fulfill its potential, and maybe because it's limited processing and whatever, but it had a lot of neat opportunities with the remote. The Kinect was a neat gimmick for a while and was kind of cool, and then it sort of got a little bit tedious. But we saw that, man, there is a whole nother level of interaction with these systems that would be really, really cool.
Well, and what I think is really interesting now on the gaming side is that it's able to bring, like, there is really nothing that can substitute for immersion, right? Mm-hmm. For just feeling like, no, I'm here. I'm in a place. I'm doing a thing. Like, there's just that line that is crossed in your brain. And that's because, like, you know, Brian, if you have had the same experience that I have, where, you know, when you're looking at those, like, I've already developed my snobbish sensibility when I'm looking at reviews of games, and they're just like, yeah, this is an Oculus port. And it's like, oh, geez, well, it'll be great if I, you know, just want to sit down.
Well, and that's the question, is whether or not, you know, we're on the right side of history by going with the higher fidelity experience, for sure.
No, I was kind of. I think that for us, I think it really came down to is, you know, going to the one that natively built in has the room sensing, you know, is that was going to be, and that, again, Oculus is now adding more support for that and to make that better. So it's, you know, it's going to be not a big deal. I think that I'm excited. Like, you know what? I'm gonna say this right now. Pacific Rim, kind of hated the movie, but you know what? Pacific Rim, the video game, kind of into the idea.
I mean, can you imagine like I already get tastes of it. I'm playing Overwatch right now, and there's brief moments where I keep playing as D.Va because she starts off as a tank, and when her mech blows up, she gets to run around, and you kind of get a second bite at the apple by, if you last long enough, you could summon down another mech. Imagine a game that's like that. You run around through a city talking in bars, making backroom deals, and then all of a sudden, you know, a giant monster shows up, and then it comes down, and all of a sudden you're just a million feet tall, walking around your physical room, shooting and stomping. It'll be amazing,
dude. When I get it, I would love to be Toho Godzilla smashing cardboard Tokyo.
And there's one game, I can't remember it right now, but it is a similar, it puts you in a Godzilla King Kong. It's a very play school kind of sheen to it, but it's rad. It's super fun. It's amazing. I just, like, all I've come to the point where, you know, after I think for whatever reason, I just keep going back to speed running budget cuts now that I've beaten it. And I just, that's it. Yeah. Mac, I don't know if it's
Maximum King Kong. VR, oh, it's King Kong VR on the HTC Vive. Yeah.
But yeah, you're just picking up.
One of my favorite games of all time, which was sort of a flawed game, but is one that I just sort of super, super look forward to having working in this environment, was the Blade Runner game.
Oh, wow. You're talking about like the story game? The one yep. for the, man, back at the turn of the century. That's amazing. Yeah.
1997. So it was a Westwood game, and basically it was a point and click, go around adventure, ask, you know, questions and clues and stuff like that, you know, and they had the sound effects and everything from the movie. It was one of my favorite game experiences ever. I really, really, really dug it. And it was one of those things that, like, man, that's like, I'm not a guy that likes to run around and shoot stuff, but going around and put me into those.
You know, and in speedrunning budget cuts, like that was the one that really, really spoke to me about the vibe, just because it's like, oh man, this is everything that you need and more in to do a game like that, to do a point and click, solve stuff sort of adventure. And like, it's gotten like, I don't know. I was thinking last night, actually, Ashley's out of town. So I just do things like play the Vive by myself and think about, I should really just email the people that make it and just like offer to like write for them. Like, I just want to be a part of it. I'm just like, hey, would it help if I helped you make games? Because I just want to play new games.
Well, and I mean, that would not be the most outrageous thing on the planet to happen to these folks, you know? And to be honest, they may even say, you know, it's like, well, you know, no, or maybe they'll say yes. Who knows? We live in a
they'll
wacky
be like,
world.
Are you 12?
Yeah. It's like, no, like, hi, I'm an adult and a writer. And here's me loving your stuff. Like, those are the people you want involved in making your stuff.
Yeah, I guess that's where I'm at right now, is I'm just like, I'm so in love with the ability that like I just want to maintain momentum, right? I just want there to be a new game, because right now, here's the most disappointed I've ever been with the Vive. When you realize how short all these games are, mm-hmm. like Vanishing Realms. Vanishing Realms is fun. There are, you know, it was all made by one dude. And when you realize it was all made by one dude, you're like, dude, that's insane. That is a monumental achievement. He deserved whatever $20-$30 that I paid for it. But at the same time, there's like, you know, some frustrating play elements to it. And then at the end of it, you just kind of get to the end. And that's just sort of it, right? And you're like, man, that would have been really cool. If it were longer and different.
Yeah, I mean, this is the difference between, you know, the Bard's Tale in 1982 versus Skyrim in 2014 or whatever, you know?
I would say it's not so much a technology, it's a team difference. And that once you're now, like I was saying before, is now you're getting software developers are now committing larger teams to develop these things instead of being hobbyists and sort of side projects or ports. Is that now that you're, because it's like, well, how do we design for something there's no hardware was even shipped. And this is the first year that real hardware has shipped. I think that we're going to see a rapid, I think that when we have this conversation a year from now, you know, I think there's going to be a series of holy cow moments for a lot of people as they start playing stuff that's as developed as Skyrim, as developed as these other sorts of games. And I think that's going to make it interesting. I just want to touch on something kind of fascinating. So I was looking at the Blade Runner release from 1997,
yeah.
and there was talk of what about doing a re-release to Steam. And the creator, Louise Castle, explained, the source code and assets were lost when Westwood moved its studio from Las Vegas to Los Angeles.
Yeah, no, that happens. As a matter of fact, there's a property that I worked on that many people know that I had years and years of footage. They just they had all the original source footage, and they just, you know, someone needed room on the drive, so they just deleted it all. Told me after the fact, and I was like, I would have paid the I would have given you the $150 for enough hard drive space to grab all that.
So do we need to create, like they have, you know, now for movies, there's like the vaults to sort of keep these original motion pictures. Is there something to the idea of, hey, let's create a repository. You tell game developers, whatever, send this to us. We'll load it onto here. And, you know, you're not going to give up your rights.
I do wonder whether or not, like, I know Scott Johnson has connection to Utah State, which has a very well-renowned video game development program, but you think that we get, somebody's got to do that, right? Someone's just got to be the Library of Congress for video games.
Well, and not even, I mean, they can already do that with the final output, but the source code
for the assets,
and the assets and stuff is a different thing. And of course, you know, we can emulate, but in a world where, man, if you're going to redo that as a VR experience, you can't just emulate. You can't just take the story that, you know, that was at 640 by 480 pixels and extrapolate that into a VR experience. However, you could do that for all the source codes, code and original note and branching story structures and all that stuff.
Well, that's part of like what they would do is for if they wanted to do if they had the Blade Runner game, they would say, okay, let's take the basic game engine, but let's go take all these assets and scale that up. But we can't because it doesn't exist. It's only a game. They don't have all the original stuff anymore. So sorry, kids.
I will say this: the one thing I'm so excited about with the Vive is being a co-production of with Valve and HTC. The idea that it is so well integrated into Steam, and like I'm only as far away as a developer is from hitting the upload button, away from just getting it in my life immediately, is just so exciting. Like,
Do you feel like you've picked a team that you're identifying with the platform now? First of all,
it's the one that I own, right? And I've played Oculus stuff before. I haven't played final version Oculus stuff, so that is you know my soft spot. I would like to see where it is, you know, but right now I'm very happy with what this can do, and I think that we are seeing a fraction of its potential, and it is engrossing and amazing, and that's why it's so exciting.
Meanwhile, Microsoft has said that its HoloLens is a platform they're opening up to other developers as both augmented and virtual reality, or what they call mixed reality. So that's another, I think that'll be interesting, because at least with Oculus and Vive is, you know, Unity and Unreal, those engines, those companies make it pretty easy to port them to one thing or the other. And as you know, Oculus figures out its controller situation and what's going to be, you know, ideal, and we sort of get that. Then we're going to have Microsoft come in and say, hey, we're going to spend billions of dollars. Is there another Bungie we can buy? Because we really want to make you use our platform.
Yeah, I'm going to ask on Twitter whether or not there's any real tribalism with different VR platforms. If anyone out there is like, yeah, man, shut up, Team Oculus is going to win or whatever, or maybe... Because I assume there's still...
Do you think
there's
a possibility that won't?
I don't know.
Show up?
I don't know. That's okay. I just asked on Twitter. I'll report here shortly. Pix. I'm sorry. You looked like you had something to say, Joe.
Oh, no. We can get into Pix. Man, I feel like I should pick a VR game. I did like Vanishing Realms. Here's... I don't know. This is kind of an anti-pick, though, because I'm just going to nitpick it. But, like... no, I'm not going to. But it's a good game. It's a good game. Play it. It's fine. It's enough to kind of scratch that itch, but it's not. It wasn't enough for me to like be super excited about it. I will say, hey, you know, Brian, what are your demos when you run people through the demos?
Oh, dude, here's what you do. You always start with Tilt Brush because it is abstract, and the moment they put it on, they don't really have anything. They don't feel like they're in a place. You're just sort of floating or whatever. And then you get that moment where they paint with light and you hear them say like, oh, and then they take a step forward and then it's like, oh, and then you let them play in that for a bit. And then you take them into, it's like, oh, would you like something more immersive? They're like, well, yeah. And then you move them into Job Simulator, which is a no stakes, I'm using air quotes when I say game, because you just play around pretending to be a chef or whatever. Job Simulator is great because it's immersive and you look down and you have hands and people immediately kind of grok that. And then depending on, and this is totally sexist to say, but whether they're male or female or whether they're a gamer or not, usually I'll say, like, you ready to go to 11 and we'll go to Space Pirate Trainer or... I did. I forget the other one that I had on backup. The increased levels of fidelity. So they keep getting those aha moments. You know, they grasp what they're in. They grasp what they can do, and then they finally get that adrenaline rush over the top experience.
You know, the reason why Tilt Brush is such a great example. When I was at the MizCon, they had a Vive set up with Tilt Brush, and there was lines, you know, people signed up for days in advance to go play with it. And we had one great artist who did a really, you know, a professional artist went in an amazing dragon in it. But what makes it I think so cool and why you get that big aha is that if you're in your head, you're like, oh, so it's like just a big video screen that wraps all around me and I turn around. But when you get in there and the idea of 3D space settles in on you, because that's the experience that we don't really have. We have momentary bits of in a 3D movie, but not where you tilt your head and it's still, it's still really three-dimensional. And when you're in Tilt Brush and you paint an object in front of yourself and it's hovering there and you move your head a little bit to the side and you're like, oh, I can see it from over here.
Yeah.
And it becomes a real object at that point.
Yeah.
And that's really the big moment of magic with like a space pirate trainer or something is like when a laser beam is coming right at your face and, you know, you've died a million times in a video game because this has happened, right? This beam is coming right at you and you just like, you just move your head.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, to their credit, all four of my over 60 crowd that I took on the tour, they all got it instantly. Like there's this moment. Do you remember that moment that Dean Kamen first showed the segue on the Tonight Show and he's still busy trying to explain to Sting and Jay Leno about how, no, you lean this forward, you lean this back. And then they're like, yeah, we get it. And they just started racing around in circles. Like that's what happens with the Vive for sure.
Yeah. Well, and specifically with people who are probably lifelong gun owners with shooting games, right?
fair enough.
I'm going to just double down on my pick from before, which was the iPad Pro. I've been loving it. I'll give you guys an update next week to tell you how it's been working in my workflow as a writer. And then real quick, Silicon Valley. I'm caught up on Silicon Valley, and that is a fun show.
Man, I've been very, very happy with Silicon Valley this season. I think it's
Here's what I want from Silicon Valley. I want them to do a prequel of T.J. Miller of Aviato. I want to watch a standalone series about that. He's growing to become probably my favorite character there.
I think he's the episodes are at their best where they can get him into a new and different silly thing, right? So I totally agree with you there. Just great work by everybody. So great. Also, Game of Thrones is good. Also, Veep picked up. Also, I like television. Oh, hey, my pick is Preacher. I loved the pilot for Preacher. I'm very excited for the second episode.
Sweet. Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.